obviously I'm delighted to be working with Martin and Seamus and the other staff. So I just really appreciate the opportunity I have in the moment. I'm always not thinking too far ahead, if at all possible, and just focusing on helping Ireland qualify.
Roy Keane speaking to Ray Darcy on Today FM this week. Going nowhere, it seems. This is the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. We're going to be looking back at the upcoming Macron Galway Cup, which takes place in August. I'll be chatting to Extra Time journalist Pete Kelly. I'll also be catching up with Why Big's Liam Murray about Damien Duff's Why Big 7-a-side Kings Tournament taking place in June. If you'd like to contact the show, you can mail dave@talkingsport.org. We're also at talkingsport.org on Twitter, and it's facebook.com/talkingsport.org. You can also just search for Dave O'Grady on Twitter. I think I'm one of the first ones that come up. Now, to kick things off on the show tonight, I want to look at Irish players in England, as the PFA Awards have featured several Irish players in the league. And I'm delighted to be joined by Gareth Morgan, writing the programmes for the Pert Glory Club from a shack in Dublin. Gareth, we spoke about the teams of the year and the Irish. You always give us the best Irish players that are in the Championship, League One and League Two. One or two of the players that you have mentioned have made it into these teams of the year. But just to start with the Premier League and Seamus Coleman as right back on the team, I don't think there was any doubt about that. A lot of the English commentators had made the point that he was the best right back in the league, and, you know, himself and Baines perhaps the best fullbacks in the Premier League.
Yeah, as you said, absolutely no surprise whatsoever. A superb season for Seamus Coleman, and something that bodes extremely well, I think, for the Ireland's forthcoming Euro Championship campaign as well. The fact that he chipped in with a good few goals as well, the set-piece delivery, exceptional, the crossing from wide areas, exceptional going forward as well. So depending on how Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane wish to employ him, you know, that bodes well from an attacking point of view as well as a defensive one.
Some people are suggesting that Seamus Coleman should be used in the same way as Austria used players like David Alaba. But to take Seamus Coleman out of his preferred right wing back position would be maybe a little bit tricky, because we've seen him all season for Everton. I know for a period he was playing as a right midfielder when Phil Neville was still in the squad, but right wing back is his natural position, and he probably should be played there going forward in those Euro qualifiers. Would you agree?
Oh, certainly. But I think you can possibly tinker with a system that, by where you can actually play as an out and out fullback, but still have license to roam. I'm sure that O'Neill and Keane will have various tactical options up their sleeve. So whether they play him as an out-and-out wing-back or whether he plays as a more conventional full-back, I'm sure they'll have a system worked out by where they can maximise his attacking potential down that right flank.
Do you think, Gareth, that he can get better? Because I was looking at Ashley Cole there playing for Chelsea. After so many years, I think he's something like 33. And indeed, for England, he's been so consistent over the years in his position, really nailed it, and a lot of big clubs are still very much interested in him. He hasn't gone away. Do you think Seamus Coleman could reach those levels?
I certainly don't see why not. I mean, I think that what's important with Seamus Coleman is that first and foremost, he's a very good defender, and I think that there is a modern trend for fullbacks to be almost more rated about their attacking potential, and I guess we've just done that a little bit in our previous comments. But first and foremost, he's got a very good solid defensive grounding. He's very good from a positional point of view, and I think that's almost a rarity these days. You see, I suppose if you're looking for one as an example, Glenn Johnson being a prime example, excellent going forward, looks more comfortable in the attacking third than he does in the defensive third. So I think Coleman has that in his locker. It is a rarity in modern football, and I honestly think the world's his oyster at the moment. He's playing absolutely at the top of his game. He's playing regular football for a club that's doing well. And I really do think that he can push on and get even better.
He signed a new bumper deal at Everton this season, but there has been rumours about the likes of Manchester United coming in with a multi-million pound move for him. Can you see any of that happening, or do you think it'll be a case where he'll stay, play a season through Europe, whether it's the Champions League or Europa League, in fact, where there actually is more games, and then maybe assess his options? There's going to be a lot of football to be played next season.
Well, that's right. He is looking at a very busy season if he does stay with Everton. I think it's very hard to predict anything that Manchester United will do on the transfer front at the moment, given the state of flux that the club seems to find it in. When you look at it from the outside, without taking the finances into account, you probably think that he'd be better off staying at Everton for what promises to be a pretty exciting season for them coming up. And as I said, he's playing regular first team football, which is a massive bonus for him. So yeah, you'd say looking from the outside, stay at Everton, but again, I suppose money will talk. And if like the rest of us, if somebody comes in and offers to double your wages, it's going to be something that will be tough to turn down.
Yeah, we wish Seamus the very best of luck going forward, and many, many congratulations on making the PFA Premier League Team of the Year. Terrific right back altogether. Now, also, if we're looking at the Championship, Gareth, we always talk about a lot of Irish players in the Championship doing well, and probably the most talked about Irish player in the Championship this year was Andy Reid. Now, it's great to see that he did make the Team of the Year. A little bit surprising because he was so injured for such a long period, and his injury coincided with Nottingham Forest's complete collapse in form. You know, they were looking for one stage of getting automatic promotion to the Premier League, but as soon as Andy Reid seemed to get injured, he was their captain, playmaker, their go-to man, it all fell apart. But to get in the Team of the Year, a positive for Andy, and he'll be disappointed that Nottingham Forest won't be competing for a Premier League place.
Well, as you said, it has been a complete implosion at the City Ground. And I mean, he was absolutely flying when, I think crucially, when the voting took place for these awards. He was absolutely at the peak of his powers this season. And that's not taking anything away from him. He's, when he's been on the field, he's been absolutely superb for Forest. Yeah, very, very disappointing season, really, for them. It's a strange decision to bring Billy Davis back in. The fans weren't especially pleased to see him come back in. He'd had his problems with the media in the past, bizarrely holding post-match press conferences before games, as I remember, and then refusing to speak afterwards. So they have perhaps been the architects of their own downfall in some ways. And Andy Reid might have been better off out of it over the last few months, because they really have been an absolute train wreck of a club on and off the field. I see that he's still not back. I can't imagine that he'll play in their final game of the season, which is against Brighton on Saturday. But I guess from an Irish perspective, his absence has opened up a midfield berth at Stephen McLaughlin, I see, has filled for the last couple of games. He's made two starts, the former Derry City man. So bad news for Andy at the moment, but good news for McLaughlin there.
Yeah, Stephen McLaughlin coming over from Derry. A lot of people felt that he could do something similar that James McLean did when he first came onto the scene, but it wasn't to be. He's had to bide his time. But do you think now he's put in a couple of solid performances, do you think it might be a case now where he'll be able to build on that and get a real run next season?
Well, it'll be interesting. Of course, again, it's hard to predict because Stuart Pearce is due to come in, I think, on the 1st of June, either the 1st of June or the 1st of July. So I presume that he'll have been keeping a very close watching brief on Forest ever since his appointment was announced. He'll have his own plans, his own ideas on personnel. I'd say there'll probably be quite a big turnover in terms of playing personnel at Forest as soon as Pearce takes the reins. But certainly, you know, McLaughlin's come in, by all accounts, done pretty well in those two games. He's had his opportunity and he's taken that opportunity. Still only 23, so you'd like to think that yeah, he might go on and have a better season next year under Pearce. And I think Forest overall will probably enjoy a better season next term.
And for their captain, Andy Reid, it has been a remarkable season before the injury. It's something about Andy, Gareth, that as soon as he gets himself in shape, he's always looked to be a really, really quality player. His build-up play, his control, his shots, he scored wonderful goals, and he can tackle as well. A serious future and present for Ireland. I mean, he is getting on, people will say, but no doubt he still has something to offer the Irish international team.
I think he does. And he's, as you said, he's been a fan's favourite for a number of reasons. I don't think it's just the ability either. I think the fact that he carries a little bit of cargo sometimes around the midriff just actually makes him even more of a fan's favourite. I don't know if fans can relate to him or whatever it might be, but yeah, there's just something about him. He's a great player to watch. As you said, he's a danger from, well, really anywhere from 40 yards out, capable of cracking a ball either in open play or from a set piece. And he's just one of those players I think even opposition fans secretly quite like to watch. He can turn a game on his head in a split second. And I guess, as well, as you said, with his advance in years, having this break, I know it's an enforced break from injury, but I guess it will, you know, there won't have been any toll on his body. He'll have been recovering, so he should be reasonably fresh as and when the qualifiers begin, you know, come September time.
And can you see Martin O'Neill calling him in? Because we've seen himself and Wes Houlihan in the last few kind of friendly matches, they've been able to alternate between that, you know, playing behind the striker role, as they're similar type players. They like to get on the ball, pass it about. But Andy Reid, certainly with his experience at international level as well, going back quite a long period, and basically the impact that he had this season for Nottingham Forest, surely that's got to stand to him, and he should be in the manager's plans.
Oh, I'd say he'll definitely be in the plans. And I mean, I think what else goes in his favour is that both Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane still retain very close links at Forest. They'll be very aware of the progress that he's been making in terms of recovering from that injury. They'll be very aware, you know, of the sort of time scale that the Forest medical staff are looking at in terms of him being fully fit. And I would imagine that he will feature in at least a couple of the friendlies that Ireland have got coming up, possibly even the game against Turkey, I believe, towards the end of next month.
Yeah, best of luck to Andy there. It would be great to see him back on the pitch. Now, John Joe O'Toole was a player that you touted here on the Why Big Football show about 2 or 3 weeks ago, a player that could be putting his hand up for selection. And you weren't wrong with his form, because he has made the PFA League 2 Team of the Year. You were dead right. He's had a great season and something he'll look to build on. Maybe he'll get a move back to League 1 or Championship at the least.
Well, yeah, it's great to see that he has made the team. Again, I think he has benefited a little bit, like Andy Reid, in terms of the timing of the vote, because unfortunately, since I touted him, I guess, and bigged him up on the show a few weeks ago, he's gone right off the boil, I suppose, predictably. I don't think he scored for 6 or 7 weeks. He actually lost his place in the side at one stage. But no, he's had overall a very prolific season in front of goal. It does look as if Bristol Rovers will just escape relegation. They had an absolutely vital win at Wickham last weekend. And if you're a fan of celebratory pitch invasions, I recommend that you have a quick look at the scenes that greeted their winning goal at Adams Park. It was more of almost a crowd explosion. They literally just burst onto the field. But so Rovers will stay up. And I would imagine that that a number of teams in League One will have looked at O'Toole's record this season and the way he goes about his business. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does move up. I don't think he'll move up more than one division. I can't see a Championship team really taking a punt on him just at the moment, but maybe even one of the newly promoted sides, you know, maybe a Chesterfield or a Scunthorpe might have a look at O'Toole and decide that they think he can do a job up in League One. Good to see him in that Team of the Year.
It certainly is. And you were mentioning about inconsistency there with O'Toole. I mean, he plays really well for a lot of games, and then all of a sudden he kind of falls off the boil again. It got me thinking of Alan Judge, the Irish Messi, as he was mentioned by Jeff Stelling on Gillette Soccer Saturday before. He's playing, I think, on loan to Brentford, a team that has gotten promotion themselves, but he's put in some really good performances, scored a few goals, but again, it's a case, I think he's still on loan from Blackburn Rovers. Its consistency is the key, and a lot of Irish fans have made the point that he has had potential over the years. He's 25 now, so maybe we'll see a little bit more of him if he can maintain a place in his club squad.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. Again, I think Blackburn are a team a little bit like Nottingham Forest. I would expect Blackburn to have a better season next year. So it'll be interesting to see if Judge comes back from his loan spell and can force his way into the first team picture a little bit more at Ewood Park. I think it's fair to say that Gary Bowyer has done a very good job there. He does have a very good squad at his disposal, there's no doubt about that, but there have been several other managers who've had similarly good squads. The club seems to have got through that stage where it kind of turned in on itself and all sorts of unsavoury things going on. So it'll be interesting to see if Judge can enjoy a good pre-season, as I said, force his way back into the manager's thinking there. I would think that Blackburn will strengthen again in the summer, so there will be stiff competition for midfield places, and he will have to have a very good pre-season, I would imagine, to try and get himself back into the frame.
We wish him the very best of luck. Silky skills, neat footwork, that's the way you can sum up Alan Judge. Hopefully it all goes well there. Jeff Hendrick, another player playing for Derby County, he's back from injury and he's been doing quite well, getting himself on the goal sheet as well, which has been hugely helped. I know some people have said regardless of what happens, he'll be a Premier League, regardless of what happens in the playoffs, he'll certainly be a Premier League player next season. We'll see what happens there, but he's got age on his side. He starred in Ireland's last under-21s game. He's a very good midfielder. I know a lot of them have good things to say to him there at Derby.
Absolutely. 3 goals in the last 2 games for Jeff Hendrick, as you rightly say, and starring in the midfield. And he's not on his on his own at Derby either. Several excellent midfielders there, again, like Hendrick, who have been strongly linked with moves to the top flight, regardless of whether the Rams managed to come up through the playoffs. Will Hughes being another one. Liverpool said to be interested in him. And we've talked about Patrick Bamford previously, an attacking midfielder, sometimes an out-and-out striker on loan from Chelsea there. So, Steve McLaren's got a good clutch of young midfielders there, and it's excellent to see Hendrick among the goals and really holding his own amongst what is a quality midfield. And when you look at Derby's form line, you certainly wouldn't put it past them to come through the playoffs. I think they've won their last 5 on the bounce. And again, McLaren's done a good job there. Something of a figure of ridicule, which I thought was a little bit harsh. Okay, did a bad Dutch accent and didn't do a great job with England. But, you know, the bottom line is he's a very, very good and very highly credentialed coach. And he's done an excellent job. He's quietly gone about his business at Derby. He's got excellent young players to work with, but he's honed those young players and improved them. And you wouldn't bet against Derby coming through the playoffs, especially if Hendrick can keep that goal-scoring form going.
It would be great to see him in the Premier League. And as you mentioned, I think Steve McLaren made himself a YouTube sensation with that Dutch accent. It was great to see. Just a quick final point on Hendrick, Gareth. This is probably the perfect time for him to get a call now into the Irish senior squad, Gareth. We have those friendlies against Turkey at home and then playing Italy in Craven Cottage, and then it's off to the USA for matches against Portugal and Costa Rica. The perfect opportunity for international football for a player of his calibre and age.
Absolutely. He's hit form, as we said, with 3 goals in 2 games. And I guess the good thing as well is that going into the Turkey game, with Derby being involved in the playoffs, he'll still be fresh. You know, he will have probably played, certainly if they get to the final, he'll still have that to look forward to. But he will have played in the 2 semi-finals, so he'll be absolutely fresh and fit and firing. And he'll definitely be an asset to the squad. And I would think that he will get plenty of game time in those 2 friendlies. Very, very highly rated at Derby, and a player that is blossoming under Steve McLaren's tutelage.
It's great to see. We spoke a lot about strikers, Gareth, and the lack of strikers in the Irish ranks, but it's good to see Leon Best finally kind of getting over his injury and putting in a shift for Sheffield Wednesday. Of course, coming on, scoring a goal or two here and there and setting up stuff. It's great to see. Do you think he can get, to pardon the pun, back to his best?
Yeah, I just don't know with Leon Best. I'm still not convinced. It's just a personal opinion. I think he flatters to deceive. I don't know if it's his mental approach. On his day, he can be an absolute match winner, but he just doesn't seem to have enough of those days. Like I said, he really can turn a game on his head. He's got all sorts of quality. In some ways, he's probably too good for the Championship, but he just lacks that consistency. Whether it'll come back to him at Sheffield Wednesday, I mean, they're a team in many ways that lacks consistency. You really never know quite what you're going to get with the Owls. Even from one half to the next, they seem to be involved in some real ding-dong battles, and you know, it's a massive club that's not fulfilling its potential and hasn't done for some considerable time. So in many ways, he's had a club that sort of almost reflects his own, personality, but his own career in some respect.
Let's just hope his best years are not behind him. Andy Keogh, a player that Irish fans kind of wanted to see the back of, but yet he keeps doing it. He got a goal and assist in Blackpool's 2-0 win over Wigan to help them out of relegation. He's been up and down as well. A lot of people have suggested that he's the perfect championship player and nothing more. What do you think?
Yeah, that's as cruel as that. So, well, I suppose not cruel, but a little bit harsh, but probably true in fairness. But he works extremely hard. That's the one thing you can't criticise about Andy. He works extremely hard, especially if you're playing a kind of 4-3-3 and he plays out as that wide attacker. He doesn't really score, I don't think, enough goals to justify being played as an out and out central striker. He's more of a provider who's going to chip in with, I guess, 7 or 8 goals a season. I think he scored something like 5 or 6. Admittedly, he has been in and out of the side, and he has been playing for a struggling side as well at Blackpool. But quality wise, I'm not sure that he's much better than Championship, and I'm not sure really that he's got what it takes at international level either. Which is not to take away. He's had a good career, and he is capable of playing some great stuff. But I think the Championship is his level, and I guess he'll be in that Championship regardless of what happens. I think probably Millwall and Blackpool will both just about stay up. That's my prediction from what is a very tight relegation scrap down there in the Championship.
Yeah, because I know a lot of Irish fans, you mentioned Millwall there, would be also a little bit concerned about David Ford. He seems to step up to the plate for Ireland. There's no doubt about that. He's had some great performances, pulled off saves. I think it could have been about 7 or 8 nil had he not pulled off a couple of wonderful saves away in Germany in the last World Cup qualifiers. But maybe, do you think he has the ability to get another move, because the Irish goalkeeping situation is a little bit worrying?
It is, yeah. I, as I understand it, Ford is due to come out of contract at Millwall at the end of the season, and I think sensibly enough he's keeping his options open to see what division the Lions find themselves playing in before committing his future one way or the other. I think he's a very good goalkeeper. I think he could probably do a job in the top flight. I think you're right with your assessment of his abilities. He's produced some stunning displays for Millwall this season, but he has sprinkled in a fair few clangers as well and some costly ones. Now, you can say in his defence, pardon the pun, that there hasn't been much of a defence in front of him at times, because they have been pretty porous, Millwall, at the back this year. So I think he's had a decent year. I don't think he's had a great year. And I think, again, that's probably the assessment you could draw at the moment about him as a goalkeeper. He looks like a very good goalkeeper. Whether he's a world-class kind of Shea Given-esque goalkeeper at this stage, I think you'd have to say that the jury's out. But it'll be interesting to see now what happens with his future. Millwall take on Bournemouth this weekend. And certainly, a victory in that game would safeguard them in the Championship, and then I guess it'll be time for them to sit down with David Ford and see where his future lies.
Yeah, it's also difficult seeing Ireland's other keeper, Rob Elliott, kind of having a tough time when getting the chance at Newcastle, playing in a team that really just want to go on their summer holidays. There's no doubt about that. Just before we go, is there any other players that have grabbed your attention, stood out down the leagues?
They have, actually. I was watching Yeovil, unfortunately, get relegated out of the Championship. I think a lot of neutrals would have quite liked to see them stay in there and defy the odds. You know, a plucky team from the southwest playing at that level for the first time. But Shane Duffy on loan, as he has been down there from Everton all season.
He's played like every game, I think, Garrett.
And he's been absolutely outstanding. I mean, again, a bit like David Ford, he's had plenty of practice at the back, because they've been on the back foot in a lot of games. But talk about putting his body on the line against Brighton. He was like almost like a one-man defence at times in that game on Friday. And every time I've seen him, he's been absolutely superb. So I would imagine, like several of the other players that we've discussed tonight, that he will come into the reckoning for the squad for the upcoming friendlies that Ireland have. Certainly if Delaney at Palace is being talked about, as featuring prominently in those squads, then Shane Duffy would definitely be worth a look. Mooney at Orient, again, a bit like O'Toole. We discussed him a couple of weeks ago, and since then he struggled for goals. He's gone off the boil, so our apologies to him. But he will have Kevin Lisby back with him, who's back to fitness at Leighton Orient. I think that'll help. That might take the burden off his goal-scoring shoulders a little bit. So certainly those two are players that that have caught my eye over the last few weeks.
Fantastic. And just a final point on Duffy. Is there a chance, because Martinez has come out and made the point that they are watching him, they're keeping a close eye on his performances for Yeovil. No doubt they'll be very happy. And he's had good performances for the Irish under-21s as well. He's a big 6'6" fella. You know, when high balls come in, he's well able to deal with it, as we have seen. Is there a chance, though, with the amount of games, the sheer number of games that Everton are going to play next season? You've got Premier League, League Cup, FA Cup, and probably, most likely, Europa League, which is loads of matches. Is there a good chance that he will get a lot of game time for Everton next season?
Well, you'd like to think so. I mean, it's impossible to second guess Roberto Martinez's plans and what he might do in terms of strengthening his squad in the summer. But from Shane Duffy's point of view, you know, he's been loaned out to the Championship. He couldn't have done any more. He's been absolutely exceptional. I would expect him to take out at least one of the Yeovil, you know, either Players' Player or Player of the Year awards down there. So, you know, he can go back to Goodison Park with his head held high. And as you said, they are going to have a massive workload on the agenda next season, Everton. So you would imagine that they will keep him at the club, certainly to start with, for the first few months. He might go out when that loan window opens towards the end of the year if he's not getting much of a look in, but he will have an opportunity. Absolutely. I mean, the lad Stones that Everton have given an opportunity to, you know, he's done exceptionally well. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a bit of a bolter for the England squad at centre back. So, you know, Martinez is obviously quite happy to throw players in if he thinks they're good enough. And as I said, Shane Duffy has certainly put his hand up for that. And I think the same could apply to one of your particular favourites, Mr. Grealish at Notts County.
They look like they're going to be safe in League One.
It looks as if they will be safe. And again, he couldn't have done much more either. He's gone down from Aston Villa to a club there at Notts County that have been struggling desperately to stay in that division, and has been absolutely outstanding. You know, in terms of both his assists and scoring goals and just his general play, he's been a standout for Notts County. They should survive. I think they need a point against Oldham next weekend, having beaten, I think it was Swindon last weekend. And there was a good brawl in that game, if you fancy, if you're a fan of a brawl and you want to get on YouTube and have a look at that one. So, yeah, Grealish is another one. I think Ender Stevens, also another loanee from Aston Villa, has been getting plenty of game time, certainly for Doncaster Rovers, another club that's been in a relegation scrap. So he's probably been improving his experience and his resume, as it were, with his displays for Doncaster. And their survival or otherwise will be decided on the final day of the season at the weekend as well.
And for the likes of Stevens and Grealish, in fact, on loan from Aston Villa, it will perhaps make him a much better player. The fact that he has been in a League One relegation dogfight, he's obviously going to toughened up a lot. And when he goes back to Villa in the summer, perhaps they can say, well, wow, he's been playing every minute of every match pretty much for Notts County. That's got to benefit him. And maybe if there is openings in that Villa team, he could get in there. He is still so young, though.
Well, that's it. They both got age on their side. And as you said, they will have been physically hardened by those experiences in what is a tough old division, the Championship. And I guess they'll return to their parent club with a certain bounce in the stride. You know, they're lads now who've played 30 or 40 games, you know, first team games, and really performed very, very well. And, you know, I think they'll go back to Villa as slightly different players, more confident players, and players who, you know, expect to come into first team contention rather than, you know, perhaps, I'm not saying that they would accept being on the fringes, but I think they'll come back with certainly a bit more of a swagger. And I think the same might apply to Joe Mason as well, who's been excellent for Bolton.
He's on loan from
Cardiff City. I suppose he's a bit of an upgrade on Andy Keogh in many ways. You know, he tends to play wide in a front three, but he certainly chips in with more goals. And it's hard to know what will happen with Cardiff next season. You don't know what division they'll be in yet. But certainly he's someone who's gone out on loan and couldn't have done much more than he has done at Bolton.
And he has years on his side as well. Well, Gareth Morgan, thanks a million for joining us and bringing us up to date with the Irish players in action in the leagues across England. Thanks a million.
No problem.
If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. I'm delighted to be joined by Liam Murray of whybig.ie. And Liam, it's probably fair to say that Saturday, the June 28th, is a very special day. It's the Damien Duff Whybig 7-a-side Kings Tournament. It seems absolutely terrific. You're looking for 7-a-side teams and they get the chance to play against or meet Damien Duff. A fantastic day. You've organised it out in Irishtown Stadium.
That's correct. Damien's going to put in his own team. Subject to him actually recovering from his knee injury, he'll be playing. But if he's not playing, he'll be down there with his team, and then afterwards he'll be a part of the presentation in Slattery's. So I suppose teams and lads can get to meet him if they want. Hopefully he'll be playing. It'd be great if he is, you know.
Two terrific charities involved, Avian's Pink Tie and Heart Children. And Heart Children, I think, is a charity that Damien Duff is actually the ambassador for. So you guys get to kill two birds with one stone with this.
That's it, yeah. I mean, we approached Damien last year, but it was a bit late time-wise, but he wanted to get involved. So this year, you know, his son uses the Heart Children because his son had a heart complication when he was born. So that's how he became the ambassador for us. And then obviously Whybig's been tied in with Avian's Pink Tie from the start. Actually Damien's brother is in the army, and he'd actually done a lot of fundraising through hikes for Avian's Pink Tie, so you know, it just seemed like a good fit to have them two charities, and obviously suited in Damien as well. Yeah,
it's fantastic. And as you said there, Liam, you know, the chance to play actually against Damien Duff, providing he comes back okay from his knee surgery, which we hope he does. And you know, for players and that, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. You know, if you're a week in week out kind of five-a-side footballer or whatever, or play with the office work or that kind of thing, this would be an opportunity that surely you simply cannot afford to miss.
Well, that's it, you know. So I mean, sure, like, we need kind of tournaments are great anyway, but to actually have the chance to play against Damien Duff, I mean, you know, what more an incentive do you need as well, on top of the charity's been great as well.
Yeah, I always wondered about what it would be like, because I play a bit of five-a-side myself, you know, and I always wondered what it would be like for if you were to have a professional footballer playing in, say, a seven-a-side setting like that. Surely he'd be walking at a stroll, but yet so much better than everybody else, you wouldn't get near him.
I'd imagine someone like Duff, yes. But, you know, you'd be surprised with some of these other players, because I know someone would be down at ours and they're kind of going, the pace is quite different. And saying that, though, we had another tournament and James Chambers off St. Pat's was playing. Sneakily, I might add. But, he was the best player by far. He really steps it up. So, you know, that's the League of Ireland standard. A good League of Ireland standard player, so I'd imagine Duff should shine through compared to the rest.
Absolutely, and it'd be certainly a chance for any players to, you can learn so much just to be on the same kind of playing field as him. There's great prizes as well for anybody that's getting involved. I understand you can have the chance of winning a great trip for 10 people to a Man United game, and the team I think that raises the most for charity, they get 10 season tickets to Lansdowne Road. That's huge.
That's the first prize. Yeah. It's a football trip, you know, so I'm sure it'll appeal to lads. And then there's the FAI, John Delaney, said he'd sort 10 tickets, so thanks for that. So we decided, yeah, you know, that's a real nice prize for the team that raises the most money, because it costs 800 to enter, so you're talking about, with 10 players, it's about €80 each, which obviously you'd use sponsorship for. So, you know, we'd hope teams will raise more than that. So it's a nice incentive for you to just go the extra yard, you know. 10 season tickets, another season ticket. It's around 36 quid or something. So that's in the Whybig singing section. So, you know, that's a nice prize if you can win that.
It would indeed. And I know, I understand you also will be have plenty of other smaller prizes, you know, jerseys, match tickets, bottles of wine and the usual kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all those smaller ones as well, you know. But they're the two new main ones, you know.
Now, you were just saying about the cost there. Each team, they'll need to raise around the minimum of, I think, what, 795, so just about 800 to enter. So roughly around €80 each. And you're kind of hoping that a lot of the teams will actually take it upon themselves to probably raise more than that, because, you know, I suppose if you have big teams together and, you know, a lot of people in companies, a lot, most companies these days will have some sort of five-a-side soccer or seven-a-side soccer, as you do, it's a great chance for so many people to get involved and raise a bit of money for charity at the same time. And, you know, 800 between a couple of people, it's not that hard really, considering what they're playing for and the great cause that's there. It's not going to kill you.
Exactly. I mean, you've got time as well. So, I mean, you know, if you get a few euros off, you know, 30 people, you know, that's going to cover it. So it's not a big ask. And even on top of that, then we'll be having a raffle. So everyone that sponsors you is effectively buying raffle tickets. So I've been chatting to the two charities, so they're going to help us source prizes for that, you know. So it's not like just give us a donation, you'll actually be buying raffle tickets in essence. So that's just another incentive to make it easier to get the phones in.
And I think your target is to raise 15,000, which is a huge amount, and it'd be fantastic, especially if you get all the teams. People can have fun, but for a good cause as well. How are you doing so far? Is it on the, it's on the way?
Yeah, we're about halfway there. I mean, the two charities are going to have some teams, and Duff's team as well, and then there's about 10 lists on the YBIG, so, you know, we'll probably get most of them. So we set a target of about 20 teams. If we had 16, that would be fine as well. But I'd imagine we'll get to 20 teams and no problem.
You're running the tournament, Liam, through www.inter7s.com, and they've been a great help. And I think a lot of the tournaments that ybig.ie do, these kind of five-a-side or seven-a-side tournaments, they're great in conjunction with Inter7s. So you know it's going to be run to the best, you know, in the best possible way, the best standard, and very well organised.
Well, that's it. You'll actually work for Inter7s as well, so, I mean, it just makes sense for YBIG and ourselves to do these tournaments as well. And, like, just on a side thing, like, I mean, like, some of the sick kids from the children's ward are going to be actually as mascots down at the game. And then when I was chatting to Jimmy Norman, who is the head of Avine's Pink Tie, you know, he's, like, saying that, you know, we'll have to have, you know, there'll be 10 kids, but he'll need to have some backup kids as well, because the sad thing is these kids could be too sick to come down on the day. And it just kind of shows you, you know, this is the kind of money that you're raising it for. Some of these kids will never play football at all. So, you know, it kind of just puts us, you know, just... You know, it's a sad fact of it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully it'll encourage more people to get involved. And just a final point on the venue, Liam. It's down in Irishtown Stadium in Ringsend on the 28th of June. And for frequent soccer players or anybody who likes to have a kick about, these are fantastic facilities. I know there's been... I was down at one of the YBIG gigs down there not so long ago, and terrific facilities, and they've got everything you need really on site.
Exactly, yeah, that's a great pitch down there. And then on top of that, then after the post-match, we'll be going to Slattery's near Lansdowne Road. We'll have a section cordoned off. But the thing is, there's a World Cup match on at 5 o'clock as well, so you'll be playing that tournament then, presentation, and you're going to be watching a World Cup match, a knockout match. So, I mean, can't think of a better day than that, you know.
Yeah, presentation with Damien Duff in Slattery's Bar, and then followed by a last 16 game of the World Cup. So it's turning from a full day out to a full night out as well.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, so it's we picked a date just to coincide with that, and the Damien's date as well, so, yeah.
Brilliant.
Hopefully we can get a few more teams out of this, didn't
you? Hopefully you can. I'll do everything I can to help. It's a great cause, and any of these, just to let you know, I know for a fact that all these great tournaments, these football tournaments that you do, they always are a great success, and people have great things to say and have a lot of fun. Just for anybody looking to pre-register and get involved and find out more, what's the best way?
Probably just go on to the Inter7s website, www.inter7s.com. The info will be on the homepage with pre-registration, or if you're on the YBIG forum, you can't. If you're in the Republic of Ireland section, there's the Damien Duff YBIG 7-a-side thread there. So between them, it should be fine to get the information.
Inter7s.com, that's inter, then the digit 7 followed by an s.com, or you can just go on ybig.ie and you'll find all the information there. Liam Murray of YBIG, thanks a million for joining me. I wish you the very best of luck for this fantastic Damien Duff YBIG 7-a-side Kings tournament for two cracking charities, and I wish you all the success, and hopefully you make a lot more than you're targeted.
Yeah, okay, that's great. Thanks for the time, Dave.
Thanks a million. If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by Pete Kelly on the Why Big Football show to talk about the Macron Galway Cup. Pete, it's taking place in August. It's going to be very exciting. All the best teams from around the country are going to embark on Galway, on Salt Hill Devon. It's their annual underage tournament. You had a very successful 2013, I do believe, with a lot of great games, mostly great weather, but a lot to be thankful for. It seems to be getting bigger and bigger.
It is, yeah. Last August 2013 was a particularly good renewal of the tournament. We're looking this year at our 10th Galway Cup, and we're now sponsored by Macron. It was sponsored by Umbro in the past, and we've moved to Macron. Last year was their first year, so it was kind of it was a big year for them, and they're a really good sponsor. And it's a really great showcase for representative teams from right around the country. We do have the elite tournament, which is at what we would regard it as under 15 for years, but it's the 1999 elite, as we call it this year. It moves one year every year, so okay. It's still under 15. So that's the showpiece of the tournament. But then there are various other competitions at other age groups, with the under 13 one being particularly of interest to a lot of the scouts because it marks their card.
Exactly. I was just thinking in terms of the level of competition, as you said, you have the elite stage, which you call it the 1999 Elite Boys Tournament, and the under 13s is interest to the scouts. So I'd imagine a lot of the kids know that there's scouts watching and are always trying to put on a show, but at the same time they've got the natural competitive instinct that they want to win the tournament.
They do, and you see, at that level, what you have is district league teams from right around the country. So, and we don't have an overseas team this year. We did have Leeds United in it last year, really good quality 13-year-olds. And but the district league teams around the country, they're very competitive. They're putting a lot into the coaching side of it now, especially it's a good indication of how successful the regional development officers do from the FAI right around the country, because you can see year on year that the quality of these teams is improving all the time. And I think that it augurs very well for soccer in Ireland in the future. But again, as I said, the elite tournament, that tends to bring the big guns, the big names, and that's where people are attracted to watching quite a lot of.
Yeah, we had actually Jerry Reardon, one of the FAI regional officers, on the Why Big Football show there a couple of months ago, and one of the interesting things I seem to notice is it seems to be their curtain call. It seems to be, you know, their time to shine, and they really kind of get a lot of credit from this because there's a lot of work done at these levels, and I suppose this is a chance for them as well as the current managers of the different teams to showcase what they've done all year.
It is, and what it is it shows the progression system that the FAI are trying to promote. And the elite, the first real international team that kids can aspire to in this country is this under 15 Irish team. And all the district league teams and the emerging talent centres and that, they should be, you know, aspiring to get players into those teams. That's the ladder to success, as it were. So that Irish team now that will play in the under 15 elite tournament, they are the best players in the country, or the best players that are qualified to play for Ireland. There might be one or two from across the pond, but very few, because most of the under 15 team are home based all the time,
which is actually a bonus as well, because people would know a lot of them and they come from, as you said, around the country, because you guys are bringing all the clubs there as well. One of the key points I have to say is when you mentioned the under 15s team, we see in other sports, Pete, that, like, for instance, in Dublin GAA, they've a good few years ago they started with development squads and all this kind of thing, you know, and putting the work in at underage. They did the same in rugby, and they're kind of really getting the fruits of it now. But this is what's happening now in soccer, and tournaments like this is really showcasing the work that's going on at underage development at that age, and development squads, as you say, that under 15s Irish team. It's surely the way forward.
It absolutely is. And actually, in the earlier years of this tournament, the FAI used to put a development team into the tournament. And now what they've decided to do in the last three or four seasons is they've put the full-fledged under-15 team, the best, you know, squad of under-15s that they can find, because they found that the development squad maybe wasn't quite up to it, so that they are going to play it in other tournaments at a lower level. So because we're up here against, you know, they're up against professional teams. Like, for instance, this year now in August, in the main tournament, we'll have Ipswich Town, who have played in the tournament before. They've won the tournament before. They've very good underage system, which they need to have, that, you know, the lesser clubs. Maccabi Haifa, who are coming for about their fifth year in a row. They're full of Israeli international players, but they pick it from their cross-community players over there. So they're very, very strong as well. You know, we have Chivas from Guadalajara in Mexico, and we have DC United from Washington. They're, you know, so you've got a real international flavour in the tournament, and the Irish team is supposed to be in there, and Scunthorpe are playing in it as well for the first time, who also have a very good academy.
And I was looking back at their website, actually, galwaycup.com, and I could see that in the past you've also had teams like Manchester City, Malaga, Dynamo Moscow and all, and as you said, Maccabi Haifa. What I find is a lot of underage development people seem to say, Pete, become the best and develop to be a proper standard. You've got to be playing against the best in Europe. You've got to be playing higher quality. And that's what we've seen from the FAI's elite structures, in the sense that where they bring a team together and coach them at a higher level. But in this little tournament, the Irish teams in particular, they'll get to play against European academies and stuff like that, which is, it's really remarkable.
It is very good, and because it's in a tournament sort of format where they get to play, they'll play over a 4-day period, they're going to play five games. So it's a kind of bit of an incubator. It's almost like a fishbowl for them as well. So the coaches get to learn a lot about the players here, not just on the field, but off the field, and how they behave themselves and how they react to dealing with a squad situation and being in that fishbowl, as it were. And if you're going aspiring to be a professional footballer, you're going to have to deal with a lot of those pressures as well, not just as a player and not just getting the better of your opponent on the pitch, but how you cope with sitting on the bench and watching the guy out on the pitch that you think you're better than, you know, how you cope back in the, you know, in the holiday village and all that type of thing. So these are all ingredients, as it were, that goes to making up the young professional footballer. And some of the guys who've, you know, there's some good names have come out of the tournament in the last couple of years. And, you know, I was thinking yesterday, I was going to be speaking to you today, Dave, about the tournament. And I was just checking the results, and it was great to see Connor Wickham on the scoreboard scoring twice.
Yeah.
He starred in the tournament a few years ago for Ipswich Town, because he's a young lad that came out of the Ipswich Academy. He's still only a kid. He's still only about 21 years of age. And it's very possible that, you know, that he will still become a great player. And he showed great promise when he played in the tournament with Ipswich. Now, he was a big kid at 15. He was huge. But he could also play, you know. So he's one of the names, the real names that has come out over the last couple of years. James Forrest, who's in the Celtic first team, played as a 13-year-old in it. Good little player. He was, you know, one of these busy little, almost like the, used to be the classic old Scottish winger, they used to call him. But I mean, this guy could play, and he's made it to the first team at Celtic. And given that such a small percentage of apprentice footballers ever make it to the first team, you know, these guys have done the business, and you could see it in them. And they needed a bit of luck and running then after that.
Indeed, and for our up-and-coming players to be on the same field as players that are going to make it, it's huge as well. You've had great people involved with the tournament. The likes of, I've seen Kevin Kilvan was involved, and you've had a lot of the great underage coach, Irish international coaches involved as well.
Yeah, well, we had Kevin over last year to launch the tournament, and you know, we've had Liam Brady in the past launching the tournament, and you know, that was in the Trap days, and it was, you know, a lot of the Niall Harrison, for instance, it'd be a big supporter of the tournament, and he's been very involved with the Irish underage sections for years, whether it's being running the emerging talent centres or now running the underage under 15, 16 teams. And so he would have quite a lot to offer, and we get good advice from him as well. And, you know, we've had all the guys from the professional clubs. In fact, one of our biggest supporters over the years was Sammy Morgan. He is retired now, when he was at Ipswich Town. And, you know, Sammy was a former Northern Ireland international, you know, big, strong centre forward when he played with Aston Villa. And, you know, when he retired from football, they made no money out of it. He became a head teacher in a school.
Yeah.
And subsequently ended up running the academy at Ipswich Town. It was a great story. And in fact, one of the great things about Sammy's career, when he was playing for Northern Ireland, you know, he used to be used to share a room with George Best on the international trips, and you couldn't find two people who would be more poles apart in terms of personality and everything. But he's a wonderful man, Sammy, and he loved Georgie. You know?
Brilliant stuff. Another thing that seems to catch the attention of a lot of the coaches and a lot of the people who've been down to cover this tournament last year and over the past few years has been the excellent facilities. The setup that you have is remarkable, and you know, the pitches are always immaculate condition and the players get what they need, particularly at that age.
Yeah, well, I think there's two. Well, we've got four outstanding pitches there, and I say we because I'm one of the founding members of Sultan Devon, and have a great passion for it still to this day, and still very heavily involved in the tournament. And we have four outstanding grass pitches side by side, so the games are almost, you know, they're playing in each other's pocket, and so anybody can just walk 50 yards and they you know, they can watch a completely different game. For the surface is really good. You know, if the sun shines, there's no place better. The scouts from all the big clubs that are there, like we might have 75 or 80 scouts who sign in during the tournament to register, and there's probably a few who don't bother. And, you know, they can watch all the players in a cocoon, as it were, for the week and get all their notes taken and all that type of thing. So it works very, very well. You know, we've got a very nice clubhouse there, balcony and all that type of thing. So guys can watch it from up high as well, and maybe watch two or three fields at the same time. So it is an attraction for the teams. We try to make it a friendly tournament as well as being a serious football tournament. So yeah, it has worked very well so far, and we would hope that it would continue to do so for a long time.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of coverage, particularly on the YBIG forum. I know a lot of the Irish fans do tend to talk about it as the next, a lot of the next up and coming Irish players are on show there, and it's run in the right way, and that's one of the key things that about giving the youngsters the best facilities to showcase their talent, you know, something we haven't had in the past, but I think Irish soccer has certainly turned a corner. Another positive, just before I let you go, Pete, another positive about the tournament is the fact that it's in Galway. Galway has really kind of stepped up over the past few years in terms of putting their attention into tournaments like this and bringing international attention to the west of Ireland. I know in the past, and some players, the likes of Roy Keane and that, have said it wasn't ideal always having to travel to any underage tournaments, always to Dublin. Everything's happening in Dublin. If it's soccer, it's in Dublin. That's changed over the years.
Well, it has a bit, and I think now, you know, we in the west, or in, you know, if we were in the south or the southwest or whatever, we don't have a God-given right to get things run in our place. We have got to go out there and do it ourselves. And, you know, we saw that in the not too distant past, there was quite a lot of disquiet in Galway football over the demise of the former Galway United.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of recrimination there. And that was just silly stuff, really. Saul Tillamore Review stepped up. They were never really a great ambition to be in the league. Now you have Galway FC, and it's a good entity. It's backed by the major clubs, and it should do well. But we've got to go and get it for ourselves. Nobody owes us a professional football team in Galway. Nobody owes us a professional tournament. We've got to go and do that for ourselves. And I shouldn't be like, if one of the young kids who's starring with the Galway FC team at the moment, and he's only 17 years of age, Ryan Manning, was on the Irish schools team, scored another cracking goal, I understand, at the weekend. He's a former player of the tournament in one of the underage sections in the Galway Cup as well. And if there's one kid at the moment in Galway who has a real, real chance of making it at the very highest level, is Ryan Manning. And he's got everything. He's a good striker. He's strong. He's got a great attitude. Smart kid as well. So he's got a great chance of making it. And there are lots of other kids in Galway who have real standing talent. There's a Kennedy Cup side in Galway, managed by Tommy McLean, a good friend of mine at the moment, who will go into the Kennedy Cup this year with a real chance, whereas that's been dominated by the DDSL and for years, because and rightly so, because they had all the best players, you know.
Indeed.
They just weighed the numbers as well, you know.
Yeah. Finally, really, just before I let you go, Pete, the Macron Galway Cup, it's taking place in August. What would be your plans for this year and the future? Obviously, for this year, you want to make it bigger and better, continue the good work that you're doing, and maybe in the future have more teams, because it seems to be getting a lot of European attention there as well.
Yeah, I think our plans for the future is to keep the quality at the level it's at. The number of teams is sort of the number of teams we have. We don't want to expand it in terms just for quantity's sake. Quality is very important. Last year, we introduced an under-19 section for the first time, which was aimed essentially at the League of Ireland under-19, which is proving to be a very good league. And I think that will continue this year. We would look to get more of an international flavour, even though this year, like, if you have Mexico, the US,
of course,
you know, Israel, you know, that's a big we look to continue that type of representation and maybe get some of the good academies from continental Europe to come and join, and maybe build up the under 13 event to bring in some of the academy teams from the UK just to see what they do, and so that the local district league teams here can match themselves against them. And they're well able to match them.
Yeah, I think it has all the makings of a terrific tournament now going forward in the future. We wish you guys the very best of luck for 2014. No doubt there'll be a huge amount of attention, and we'll talk to you again about this tournament very soon on the lead up. No doubt it's going to be very exciting. Pete Kelly, thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks very much, Dave.
And just before I go on the Why Big Football show to bring you up to speed with everything happening in the League of Ireland, the SSE Airtricity League, a fantastic round of results there last Friday night. Bray Wanderers defeating Dundalk, a huge scalp there for Bray. Cork City and Bowes played out a one-all draw at Turner's Cross. Derry City and UCD had a one-all draw at the Brandywell, while Shamrock Rovers went to Drogheda United and defeated them 3-2. Limerick defeated heavily, 3-0 by Sligo Rovers at home, while St Patrick's Athletic had another emphatic win over Athlone Town. The table sees Cork City top on 21 points, joint with St Patrick's Athletic, last year's winners, but Cork do have a game in hand. Drogheda in third place with Shamrock Rovers in fourth. Sligo Rovers creeping up the table now in fifth place, and Derry City lie in sixth with Bray in seventh and Drogheda United in eighth. Bowes in ninth on 10 points, while Limerick are in 10th place, while UCD and Athlone Town make up the bottom two. Now, Athlone Town haven't won a single game yet in the League of Ireland. Very unlucky in the last few games, so hopefully they'll be getting a couple of points on the board sooner rather than later. We've got a couple of games this week. Athlone host Bray Wanderers. A real chance there for Athlone to pick up the points on Friday. Bowes take on Derry City. Dundalk take on Cork City. That's a top of the table clash. UCD host Drogheda United, while Shamrock Rovers will take on Limerick. All those games at 7:45, except for Shamrock Rovers taking on Limerick at 8 o'clock. That's on Friday, and on Saturday, Sligo Rovers play host to St Patrick's Athletic at 7:45 on Saturday. A belter there. Well, just a quick look at the Division 1 table. Shelburne leading the way on 17 points. Wexford Utes in second place with Waterford United in third. Longford Town in fourth. Galway FC in fifth. And then Finn Harps, Shamrock Rovers Bees and Cove Ramblers make up the bottom three. Cove Ramblers, only 2 points they've managed on the board so far, so hopefully, like Athlone Town in the Premier Division, they'll get a couple of results soon enough and move up the table, or at least get off that bottom place. It all remains to be seen. Just to confirm, there's a couple of games in the First Division this week. On Friday, you have Galway FC taking on Waterford United. Shamrock Rovers Bees go all the way up to Finn Harps, while Shelburne host Longford Town. Those games are at 8 o'clock, except the Galway FC and Waterford United game is at 7:45, so 15 minutes early for those up in Galway. On Saturday, Cove Ramblers will host Wexford Utes at 7:45. That's Saturday, 7:45, Cove Ramblers taking on Wexford Utes. Well, I'm afraid we're out of time here on the Why Big Football Show. My thanks to all our guests. We'll do it all again very, very soon. Remember, if you want to contact the show, you can email dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. So for myself, Dave O'Grady, have a very good week.